How about helping me get her into your car?
It's raining. I'll get soaked.
I narrowed my eyes at him.
It'll cost you, Gazzara said.
I'm not babysitting. His kids were cute, but last time I stayed with them, I fell asleep, and they cut 2 inches off my hair. He did another.
Hey, Roseanne, he yelled. You want a ride?
Roseanne got up and looked at him, deciding.
If you get into the car, Stephanie will give you $10, Gazzara said.
No, I won't, I yelled. I already gave her 20.
Did you get a diddle for it? Gazzara asked.
No, he made another.
Well, Roseanne said, what's it going to be?
I pushed the hair out of my face. It's going to be a kick in the kidney if you don't get your butt in that cop car. Went up against it. Try an empty threat. Chapter 6. I parked in my lot and slogged up to my apartment, leaving puddles in my wake. Benny and Ziggy were waiting in the hall.
We brought you some strawberry preserves, Benny said. It's a good kind, too. It's Smucker's.
I took the jam and opened my door. What's up?
We heard you caught Chooch having a snort with Father Caroli.
They were smiling, enjoying the moment.
That Choochie, he's a pip, Ziggy said. Did he really shoot Jesus?
I smiled with them. Choochie was indeed a pip. News travels fast, I said.
We're what you call plugged in, Ziggy said. Anyhow, we just want to get it straight from you. How did Choochie look? Was he okay? Was he, you know, crazy?
He took a couple shots at Mooner, but he missed. Caroli said Chooch has been excitable ever since his stroke.
He don't hear so good either,
Benny said. They exchanged glances on that one. No smiles. Water was dripping from my Levi's, forming a pool on the kitchen floor. Ziggy and Benny were standing clear of it.
Where's the little geeky guy?
Benny asked.
Isn't he hanging out with you anymore?
He had things to do. I peeled my clothes off the minute Benny and Ziggy left. Rex was running on his wheel, occasionally pausing to watch me, not understanding the concept of rain. Sometimes he sat under his water bottle and it dripped on his head, but mostly his experience with weather was limited. I slipped into a new t-shirt and clean Levi's and blasted my hair with the hairdryer. When I was done, I had a lot of volume but not much shape, so I created a distraction by applying bright blue eyeliner. I was pulling my boots on when the phone rang. Your sister's on her way over, my mother said. She needs someone to talk to. Valerie must really be desperate to choose me to talk to. We like each other okay, but we've never been close. Too many basic personality differences. And when she moved to California, we drifted even further apart. Funny how things turn out. We all thought Valerie had the perfect marriage. The phone rang again, and it was Morelli.
He's humming, Morelli said. When are you going to come get him?
Humming?
Bob and I are trying to watch the game, and this yodel won't stop humming.
Maybe he's nervous.
Fucking A. He should be nervous. If he doesn't stop humming, I'm going to strangle him.
Try feeding him. And I hung up. I wish I knew what everyone is looking for, I said to Rex. I know it's tied to Dougie's disappearance. There was a rap on the door, and my sister bounced in, looking Doris Day Meg Ryan perky. Probably perfect for California, but we don't do perky in Jersey. You're awfully perky, I said. I don't remember you as being this perky.
I'm not perky. I'm cheerful. I'm absolutely not crying anymore, ever again. No one likes a gloomy Gus. I'm going to get on with my life, and I'm going to be happy. I'm going to be so goddamn happy Mary Sunshine's going to look like a loser.
Yikes.
And do you know why I can be happy? I can be happy because I'm well adjusted.
Good thing Valerie moved back to Jersey. We'd fix that.
So, this is your apartment, she said, looking around. I've never been here.
I looked, too, and I wasn't impressed by what I saw. I have lots of good ideas for my apartment, but somehow I never get around to buying the glass candle holders at Illuminations or the brass fruit bowl at Pottery Barn. My windows have utilitarian shades and drapes. My furniture is relatively new, but uninspired. I live in a cookie-cutter, inexpensive 70s apartment that looks exactly like a cookie-cutter, inexpensive 70s apartment. Martha Stewart would have a cow over my apartment. "Geez," I said. "I'm really sorry about Steve. I didn't know you two were having problems." Valerie flopped onto the couch.
"I didn't know either. He broadsided me. I came home from the gym one day and realized Steve's clothes were gone. Then I found a note on the kitchen counter about how he felt trapped and had to get away. And the next day, I got a foreclosure notice on the house."
"Wow."
"I'm thinking this could be a good thing. I mean, this could open up all sorts of new experiences for me. For instance, I have to get a job."
"Any ideas?"
"I want to be a bounty hunter."
I was speechless. Valerie, a bounty hunter. "Did you tell Mom?"
"No. Do you think I should?"
"No."
"The thing about being a bounty hunter is that you make your own hours, right? So I could be home when the girls get out of school. And bounty hunters are kind of tough, and that's what I want the new Valerie to be. Cheerful, but tough."
Valerie was wearing a red cardigan sweater from Talbot's, designer jeans that had been ironed, and snakeskin loafers. Tough seemed like a stretch. "I'm not sure you're the bounty hunter type," I told Valerie.
"Of course I'm the bounty hunter type," she said enthusiastically. "I just have to get into the right mindset."
She sat up straighter on my couch and started singing the Rubber Tree Ant song.
"He's got high hopes, high hopes."
Good thing my gun was in the kitchen, because I had an urge to shoot Valerie. This was taking the cheerful thing way beyond where I wanted to go.
"Grandma said you were working on a big case, and I thought maybe I could help,"
Valerie said. "I don't know. This guy is a killer."
"But he's old, right?"
"Yeah, he's an old killer."
"That sounds like a good place to start,"
Valerie said, bouncing up off the couch.
"Let's go get him."
"I don't exactly know where to find him," I said.
"He's probably feeding ducks at the lake. That's what old men do. At night they watch television, and during the day they feed the ducks."
"It's raining. I don't think he'd feed ducks in the rain." Valerie glanced over at the window.
"Good point."
There was a sharp rap at the door, and then the sound of someone testing the door to see if it was locked. Then there was another rap. Morelli, I thought, returning Mooner. I opened the door, and Eddie DeChooch stepped into my foyer. He had his gun in his hand, and he looked serious.
"Where is he?" DeChooch asked. "I know he's living with you. Where is the rat bastard?"
"Are you talking about Mooner?"
"I'm talking about the worthless little piece of shit who's screwing around with me. He's got something that belongs to me, and I want it back."
"How do you know the Mooner has it?" DeChooch pushed past me and went into my bedroom and bathroom.
"His friend don't have it, and I don't have it. The only one left is this Mooner moron."
DeChooch opened closet doors and slammed them shut.
"Where is he? I know you've got him locked away someplace."
I shrugged. "He said he had errands to run, and that's the last I've seen of him." He put his gun to Valerie's head.
"Who's Miss Cutesy here?"
"That's my sister Valerie."
"Maybe I should shoot her."
Valerie looked sideways at the gun.
"Is that a real gun?"
DeChooch moved the gun 6 inches to the right and squeezed off a shot. The bullet missed my television by a millimeter and lodged in my wall. Valerie went white and made a squeaky sound.
"Cripes, she sounds like a mouse," DeChooch said.
"What am I supposed to do about that wall?" I asked him. "You made a big bullet hole in it."
"You can show the bullet hole to your friend. You can tell him his head's going to look like that wall if he doesn't shape up."
"Maybe I could help you get this thing back if you tell me what it is." DeChooch eased out my front door with the gun pointed at Valerie and me.
"Don't follow me," he said, "or I'll shoot you."
Valerie's knees wobbled, and she sat down hard on the floor. I waited a couple beats before going to the door and looking out down the hall. I believed DeChooch about the shooting part. When I finally checked the hall, DeChooch was nowhere to be seen. I closed and locked my door and ran to the window. My apartment is at the back of the building, and my windows overlook the parking lot. Not especially scenic, but handy for checking out fleeing, crazy old men. I watched DeChooch leave the building and take off in the white Cadillac. The police were looking for him, and I was looking for him, and he was riding around in the white Cadillac. Not exactly the stealth felon. So why weren't we able to catch him? I knew the answer on my side. I was inept. Valerie was still on the floor, still looking pale. "You might want to rethink the bounty hunter thing," I suggested to Valerie. "Maybe I should rethink it, too." Valerie returned to my parents' house to locate her Valium, and I called Ranger back. "I'm going to bail on this case," I said to Ranger. "I'm going to hand it off to you."
"Je don't usually bail," Ranger said. "What's the deal here?"
"DeChooch is making me look like an idiot."
"And?"
"Dougie Krupper is missing, and I think his disappearance is somehow tied to DeChooch. I'm worried that I'm endangering Dougie because I keep screwing up with DeChooch."
"Dougie Krupper was probably abducted by aliens."
"Do you want to take the case or what?"
"I don't want it."
"Fine. The hell with you." I hung up and stuck my tongue out at the phone. I grabbed my bag and my rain jacket and stomped out of my apartment and down the stairs. Mrs. De Guzman was in the lobby. Mrs. De Guzman is from the Philippines and doesn't speak a word of English. "Humiliating," I said to Mrs. De Guzman. Mrs. De Guzman smiled and bobbed her head like one of those dogs people put in their car rear window. I got into the CRV and sat there for a moment thinking things like, "Prepare to die, DeChooch," and "No more Ms. Nice Guy. This is war." But then I couldn't figure out how to find DeChooch, so I did a quick run to the bakery. It was close to 5 when I got back to my apartment. I opened my door and stifled a shriek. There was a man in my living room. I took another look and realized it was Ranger. He was sitting in a chair looking relaxed, thoughtfully watching me.
"You hung up on me," he said. "Don't ever hang up on me."
His voice was quiet, but as always, the authority was unmistakable. He was wearing black dress slacks, a long-sleeved, lightweight black sweater pushed up on his forearms, and expensive black loafers. His hair was cut very short. I was used to seeing him in SWAT dress with long hair, and I hadn't immediately recognized him. I guess that was the point. "Are you in disguise?" I asked. He watched me without answering.
"What's in the bag?"
"An emergency cinnamon bun. What are you doing here?"
"I thought we might make a deal. How bad do you want, DeChooch?"
"Oh, boy. What did you have in mind?"
"You find DeChooch. If you need help bringing him in, you call me. If I succeed in the capture, you spend the night with me."
My heart stopped beating. Ranger and I had been playing this game for a while now, but it had never been articulated in quite this way. "I'm sort of engaged to Morelli," I said. Ranger smiled. "Shit." There was the sound of a key being inserted in my front door lock, and the door swung open. Morelli strode in, and he and Ranger nodded to each other. "Game over?" I asked Morelli. Morelli gave me a death look.
"The game's over and the babysitting is over, and I don't ever want to see this guy again."
"Where is he?"
Morelli turned and looked. "No Mooner." "Christ," Morelli said. He went back to the hall and yanked Mooner into the room by Mooner's jacket collar, the Trenton PD equivalent to a mother cat dragging a demented offspring by the scruff of his neck.
"Dude," Mooner said.
Ranger stood and passed me a card with a name and address written on it.
"The owner of the white Cadillac," he said.
He slipped into a black leather jacket and left. Mr. Sociable. Morelli deposited Mooner in a chair in front of the television, pointed his finger at him, and told him to stay. I raised my eyebrows at Morelli.
It works with Bob, Morelli said.
He put the television on and motioned me into the bedroom.
We need to talk.
There was a time when the idea of being in a bedroom with Morelli scared the hell out of me. Now mostly it makes my nipples get hard. What's up? I said, closing the door.
Mooner tells me you picked out a wedding gown today.
I closed my eyes and flopped back onto the bed. I did. I let myself get sucked into it, I groaned. My mother and grandmother showed up, and next thing I was trying on gowns at Tina's.
You'd tell me if we were getting married, wouldn't you? I mean, you wouldn't just appear on my doorstep in the gown one day and say we were due at the church in an hour.
I sat up and narrowed my eyes at him. No need to get snippy about it.
Men don't get snippy, Morelli said. Men get pissed. Women get snippy.
I jumped up from the bed.
That's so typical of you to make a sexist remark.
Lighten up, Morelli said. I'm Italian. I'm supposed to make sexist remarks.
This is not going to work.
Cupcake, you'd better figure this out before your mother gets her visa bill for that dress.
Well, what do you want to do? Do you want to get married?
Sure. Let's get married now.
He reached behind him and locked the bedroom door.
Take your clothes off.
What?
Morelli pushed me down and leaned over me.
Marriage is a state of mind.
Not in my family.
He picked up my shirt and looked under it.
Hold it. Wait a minute, I said. I can't do this with Mooner in the next room.
Mooner's watching television.
His hand cupped my pubic bone. He did something magical with his index finger. My eyes glazed over, and some drool trickled out the corner of my mouth.
The door's locked, right?
Right,
Morelli said. He had my pants down to my knees.
Maybe you should check.
Check on what?
On Mooner. Make sure he's not listening at the door.
I don't care if he's listening at the door.
I care.
Morelli sighed and rolled off me.
I should have fallen in love with Joyce Barnhart. She would have invited Mooner in to watch.
He opened the door a crack and looked out. He opened it wider.
Oh, shit,
he said. I was on my feet with my pants up.
What? What?
Morelli was out of the room, moving through the apartment, opening and closing doors.
Mooner's gone.
How could he be gone?
Morelli stopped and faced me.
Do we care?
Yes.
Another sigh.
We were only in the bedroom for a couple minutes. He can't have gone far. I'll go look for him.
I crossed the room to the window and looked down into the parking lot. A car was leaving. It was hard to see the car in the rain, but it looked like Ziggy and Benny's. Dark, American-made, mid-size. I grabbed my bag, locked my door, and ran the length of the hall. I caught up with Morelli in the lobby. We pushed through the doors to the lot and stopped. No Mooner in sight. The dark sedan no longer in view.
I think it's possible he's with Ziggy and Benny, I said. I think we should try their social club.
I couldn't imagine where else they take Mooner. I didn't think they'd take him home with them.
Ziggy and Benny and Chooch belong to Domino on Mulberry Street,
Morelli said, both of us climbing into his truck.
Why do you think Mooner's with Benny and Ziggy?
I thought I saw their car pull out of the lot, and I have a feeling Dougie and DeChooch and Benny and Ziggy are all mixed up in something that started with the cigarette deal.
We wound our way through the burg to Mulberry, and sure enough, Benny's dark blue sedan was parked in front of the Domino Social Club. I got out and felt the hood. Warm.
How do you want to play this?
Morelli asked.
Do you want me to wait in the truck, or do you want me to muscle you in?
Just because I'm a liberated woman doesn't mean I'm a moron. Muscle me in.
Morelli knocked on the door, and an old man opened the door with the security chain attached.
I'd like to talk to Benny,
Morelli said.
Benny's busy.
Tell him it's Joe Morelli.
He's still going to be busy.
Tell him if he doesn't come to the door right now, I'm going to set his car on fire.
The old guy disappeared and returned in less than a minute.
Benny says if you set his car on fire, he's going to have to kill you, and he'll tell your grandmother on you, too.
Tell Benny he better not have Walter Dumphy in there because Dumphy is under my grandmother's protection. Anything happens to Dumphy, and Benny gets the eye.
2 minutes later, the door opened for a third time, and Mooner got pitched out.
Dang, I said to Morelli. I'm impressed.
Dude, Morelli said.
We put Mooner in the truck and drove him back to my apartment. He got the giggles halfway there, and Morelli and I knew what kind of bait Benny had used on Mooner.
How lucky was that? Mooner said, smiling and awestruck. I stepped out for a minute to find some shit, and the two dudes were right there in the lot, and now they like me.
For as long as I can remember, my mother and grandmother have gone to church on Sunday morning. And on the way home from church, my mother and grandmother stop at the bakery and buy a bag of jelly donuts for my father, the sinner. If Mooner and I timed it right, we'd arrive a minute or two behind the donuts. My mother would be happy because I'd come to visit. Mooner would be happy because he'd get a donut. And I'd be happy because my grandmother would have gotten the very latest gossip relating to everybody and everything, including Eddie DeChooch.
I've got big news, Grandma said when she came to the door. Steve, I got hold of Loretta Ricci yesterday, and the first viewing's going to be tonight at 7. It'll be one of those closed caskets ones, but it should be worth something anyway. Maybe Eddie will even show up. I'm going to wear my new red dress. There'll be a packed house tonight. Everybody'll be there.
Angie and Mary Alice were in the living room in front of the television with the sound turned up so loud the windows were vibrating. My father was in the living room, too, staked out in his favorite chair, reading the paper, his knuckles white with the effort.
Your sister's in bed with a migraine, Grandma said. Guess the cheerful thing was too much of a strain, and your mother's making cabbage rolls. We've got donuts in the kitchen, and if that don't do it for you, I've got a bottle in my bedroom. This place is bedlam.
Mooner took a donut and drifted into the living room to watch television with the kids. I helped myself to coffee and sat at the kitchen table with my donut. Grandma sat across from me.
What are you up to today?
I have a lead on Eddie DeChooch. He's been driving around in a white Cadillac, and I just got the owner's name. Mary Maggie Mason. I took the card from my pocket and looked at it. Why does that name sound so familiar?
Everybody knows Mary Maggie Mason, Grandma said. She's a star.
I never heard of her, my mother said.
That's because you never go anywhere, Grandma said. Mary Maggie's one of them mud wrestlers at the snake pit. She's the best.
My mother looked up from her pot of beef and rice and tomatoes.
How do you know all this? Elaine Barkalowski and me go to the snake pit sometimes after bingo. On Thursdays, they got men wrestling, and they only wear little baggies on their privates. They're not as good as The Rock, but they're pretty good all the same.
That's disgusting, my mother said.
Yeah, Grandma said. It costs $5 to get in, but it's worth it.
I have to go to work, I said to my mother. Is it okay if I leave Mooner here for a while?
He doesn't do drugs anymore, does he?
Nope, he's clean. For a whole 12 hours. You might want to lock up the glue and cough syrup, though, just in case. The address Ranger had given me for Mary Maggie Mason was an upscale high-rise condo building that looked out at the river. I rode through the underground parking, checking out cars. No white Cadillac, but there was a silver Porsche with yum on the license plate. I parked in a slot reserved for guests and rode the elevator to the 7th floor. I was wearing jeans and boots and a black leather jacket over a black knit shirt, and I didn't feel dressed right for the building. The building called for gray silk and heels and skin that had been lasered and buffed to perfection. Mary Maggie Mason answered on the second knock. She was wearing sweats, and her brown hair was pulled back into a ponytail.
Yes,
she asked, peering at me from behind tortoiseshell glasses, a Nora Roberts book in her hand. Mary Maggie, the mud wrestler, reads romance. In fact, from what I could see beyond her door, Mary Maggie read everything. There were books everywhere. I gave her my card and introduced myself. "I'm looking for Eddie DeChooch," I said. "It's been brought to my attention that he's driving your car around town."
"The white Cadillac? Yeah, Eddie needed a car, and I never drive the caddy. I inherited it when my Uncle Ted died. I should probably sell it, but it's nostalgic."
"How do you know Eddie?"
"He's one of the owners of the Snake Pit. Eddie and Pinwheel Soba and Dave Vincent." "Why are you looking for Eddie? You're not going to arrest him, are you? He's really a sweet old guy."
"He missed his court date and he needs to reschedule. Do you know where I can find him?"
"Sorry. He stopped by one day last week. I don't remember which day. He wanted to borrow the car. His car is a real lemon, always something wrong with it. So I loan him the Cadillac a lot. He likes to drive it because it's big and white, and he can find it at night in a parking lot. Eddie doesn't see all that well."
"It's none of my business, but I wouldn't be loaning my car to a blind guy."
"Looks like you do a lot of reading." "I'm a book junkie. When I retire from wrestling, I'm going to open a mystery bookstore."
"Can you make a living selling mysteries?"
"No. Nobody makes a living selling mysteries. The stores are all fronts for numbers operations."
We were standing in the foyer, and I was looking around as best I could for evidence that DeChooch might be hiding out with Mary Maggie.
"This is a great building," I said. "I didn't realize there was this much money in mud wrestling."
"Mud wrestling doesn't pay anything. I stay alive with the endorsements, and I've got a couple corporate sponsors."
Mary Maggie glanced at her watch.
"Yikes, look at the time. I have to go. I'm supposed to be at the gym in a half hour."
I pulled out of the underground garage and parked on a side street so I could make a few calls. First call was to Ranger's cell phone.
"Yo,"
Ranger said. "Do you know DeChooch owns a third of the Snake Pit?"
"Yeah, he won it in a crap game 2 years ago. I thought you knew."
"I didn't know." Silence. "So what else do you know that I don't know?" I asked.
"How much time do we have?"
I hung up on Ranger and called Grandma. "I want you to look up a couple names in the phone book," I said to Grandma. "I need to know where Pinwheel Soba and Dave Vincent live." I listened to Grandma thumbing through pages, and finally she came back online.
"Neither of them's listed."
Rats. Morelli would be able to get me the addresses, but Morelli wouldn't want me messing around with Snake Pit owners. Morelli would give me a big lecture about being careful. We'd get into a shouting match, and then I'd have to eat a whole lot of cake to calm down. I took a deep breath and redialed Ranger. "I need addresses," I told Ranger.
"Let me guess," Ranger said. "Pinwheel Soba and Dave Vincent. Pinwheel's in Miami. He moved last year. Opened a club in South Beach. Vincent lives in Princeton. There's supposed to be bad feelings between DeChooch and Vincent."
He gave me Vincent's address and disconnected. A flash of silver caught my eye, and I looked up to see Mary Maggie zip around the corner in her Porsche. I pulled out after her, not exactly following her, but keeping her in view. We were both going in the same direction, north. I stayed with her, and it seemed to me she was going pretty far afield to get to a gym. I bypassed my turnoff and stayed with her through Center City to North Trenton. If she'd been on guard, she would have spotted me. It's hard for a single car to do a decent tail. Fortunately, Mary Maggie wasn't looking for a tail. I dropped back when she turned onto Cherry Street. I parked around the corner from Ronald DeChooch's house and watched Mary Maggie get out of her car, walk to the door, and ring the doorbell. The door opened, and Mary Maggie stepped inside. 10 minutes later, the front door opened again, and Mary Maggie Mason came out. She stood on the front porch for a minute or two, talking to Ronald. Then she got into her car and drove away. This time she went to a gym. I watched her park and go into the building, and then I left.
I took Route 1 to Princeton, hauled out a map, and located Vincent's house. Princeton isn't actually part of New Jersey. It's a small island of wealth and intellectual eccentricity floating in the sea of central megalopolis. It's an honest-to-God town awash in the land of the strip mall. Hair is smaller, heels are shorter, asses are tighter in Princeton. Vincent owned a large yellow-and-white colonial set onto a half-acre lot on the edge of town. There was a detached two-car garage. No cars in the driveway. No flag proclaiming that Eddie DeChooch was in residence. I parked one house down on the opposite side of the street and watched the house. Very boring. Nothing happening. No cars cruising by. No children playing on the sidewalk. No metal blaring out of a second-story boombox. A bastion of respectability and decorum. And a little intimidating. Knowing it was bought with snake pit profits did nothing to alter the feeling of old money snootiness. I didn't think Dave Vincent would appreciate having his peaceful Sunday disturbed by a bounty hunter looking for Eddie DeChooch, and I could be going out on a limb here, but I suspected Mrs. Vincent wouldn't take a chance on tarnishing her social standing by harboring the likes of Choochie. After I'd done an hour of worthless surveillance, a cop car crept down the street and pulled up behind me. Great. I was about to get rousted out of the neighborhood. If someone caught me sitting in front of their house in the burg, they'd send their dog out to take a leak on my car wheel. Backup action would be a string of profanities yelled at me to get the hell out of there. In Princeton, they send a perfectly pressed, perfectly polite officer of the law to make an inquiry. Is this class or what? There didn't seem to be anything gained by stressing Officer Perfect, so I got out of my car and walked back to him while he was checking my plate. I passed him my card and the bond contract stating my right to apprehend Eddie DeChooch, and I gave him the standard explanation of routine surveillance. Then he explained to me that the good people in this neighborhood aren't used to being under surveillance, and probably it'd be best if I conducted my surveillance in a more discreet manner. Sure, I said, and then I left. If a cop is your friend, he's the best friend you'll ever have. On the other hand, if you're not on intimate terms with a cop, it's smart not to annoy him. Watching the Vincent house wasn't going to do me any good anyway. If I wanted to talk to Dave Vincent, it was better to see him at work. Besides, it wouldn't hurt to take a look at the snake pit. Not only would I get to talk to Vincent, I'd also get another shot at Mary Maggie Mason. She seemed like a nice enough person, but clearly there was more to the story. I took Route 1 south, and on a whim, decided to take another look around at Mary Maggie's garage.
Chapter 7.
I cruised into the garage and rode around looking for the Cadillac. I went up and down every aisle, but I didn't have any luck. Good thing, too, because I didn't know what I'd do if I found Choochie. I didn't feel capable of bringing him in on my own. And the thought of agreeing to Ranger's deal gave me an orgasm on the spot, followed by a panic attack. I mean, what if I spent the night with Ranger? What then? Suppose he was so amazing I got ruined for all other men. Suppose he was better in the sack than Joe. Not that Joe was a slouch in bed. It was just that Joe was mortal, and I wasn't sure about Ranger. And what about my future? Was I going to marry Ranger? No, Ranger wasn't marriage material. Hell, Joe was barely marriage material. And then there was the other side of it. Suppose I didn't measure up. I involuntarily squinched my eyes closed. Arg! It would be awful, beyond embarrassing. Suppose he didn't measure up. The fantasy would be ruined. What would I think about when it was just me and the shower massage? I shook my head to clear my brain. I didn't want to contemplate a night with Ranger. It was too complicated. It was dinner time when I got back to my parents. Valerie was out of bed and at the table, wearing dark glasses. Angie and Mooner were eating peanut butter sandwiches in front of the television. Mary Alice was galloping around the house, pawing at the carpet and snorting. Grandma was dressed for the viewing. My father had his head down over his meatloaf, and my mother was at the head of the table, having a full-blown hot flash. Her face was flushed, her hair was damp on her forehead, and her eyes darted feverishly around the room, daring anyone to imply she was in the throes of the change. Grandma ignored my mother and passed me the applesauce.
"I was hoping you'd show up for dinner. I could use a ride to the viewing."
"Sure," I said. "I was going anyway." My mother gave me a pained expression.
"What?"
I asked.
"Nothing."
"What?"
"It's your clothes. You go to the Ricci viewing dressed like that, and I'll be getting phone calls for a week. What will I say to people? They'll think you can't afford decent clothes."
I looked down at my jeans and boots. They looked decent to me, but I wasn't about to argue with a menopausal woman.
"I have clothes you can wear," Valerie said. "In fact, I'll go with you and Grandma. It'll be fun. Does Steva still serve cookies?"
There must have been a mix-up at the hospital. Surely I don't have a sister who thinks funeral parlors are fun. Valerie popped up out of her chair and pulled me upstairs by the hand.
"I know just the outfit for you."
There's nothing worse than wearing someone else's clothes. Well, maybe world famine or a typhoid epidemic, but aside from that, borrowed clothes never feel right. Valerie is an inch shorter than me and 5 pounds lighter. Our shoe sizes are identical, and our taste in clothes couldn't be more different. Wearing Valerie's clothes to the Ricci viewing equates to Halloween in hell. Valerie whisked a skirt out of her closet.
"Ta-da!"
she sang.
"Isn't this wonderful? It's perfect, and I have the perfect top for it, too. And I have the perfect shoes. They're all coordinated."
Valerie has always been coordinated. Her shoes and her handbags always match. Her skirts and shirts match, too. And Valerie can actually wear a scarf without looking like an idiot. 5 minutes later, Valerie had me completely outfitted. The skirt was mauve and lime green, patterned with pink and yellow lilies. The material was diaphanous, and the hemline hit mid-calf. Probably looked great on my sister in L.A., but I felt like a 70s shower curtain. The top was a stretchy little white cotton shirt with capped sleeves and lace around the neck. The shoes were pink strappy sandals with 3-inch heels. Never in my life had I ever considered wearing pink shoes. I looked at myself in the full-length mirror and tried not to grimace.
"Look at this," Grandma said when we got to Steva's. "It's a packed house. We should have gotten here sooner. All the good seats up front by the casket are going to be gone."
We were in the foyer, barely able to push our way through the mourners who were spilling in and out of the viewing rooms. It was precisely 7 o'clock, and if we'd gotten to Steva's any sooner, we would have had to line up outside like fans at a rock concert.
"I can't breathe," Valerie said. "I'm going to be squashed like a bug. My girls will be orphans."
"You have to step on people's feet and kick them in the back of the leg," Grandma said. "Then they move away from you."
Benny and Ziggy were standing just inside the door to room one. If Eddie came through the door, they had him. Tom Bell, the primary on the Ricci case, was also here, plus half the population of the Berg. I felt a hand cup my ass, and I whirled around to catch Ronald DeChooch leering down at me.
"Hey, chicky," he said, "dead. I like this skirt. I bet you're not wearing any panties."
"Listen, you dickless sack of shit," I said to Ronald DeChooch. "You touch my ass again, and I'll get someone to shoot you."
"Spunky," Ronald said. "I like that."
Meanwhile, Valerie had disappeared, swept away with the crowd surging forward. And Grandma was worming her way up to the casket ahead of me. A closed casket is a dangerous situation, since lids have been known to mysteriously spring open in Grandma's presence. Best to stay close to Grandma and keep watch that she doesn't get her nail file out to work at the latch. Constantine Steva, the Berg's favorite undertaker, spotted Grandma and rushed to stand guard, beating Grandma to the deceased.
Edna, he said, nodding and smiling his understanding undertaker smile. So nice to see you again.
Once a week, Grandma caused chaos at Steva's. But Steva wasn't about to alienate a future customer who was no spring chicken and had her eye on a top-of-the-line mahogany hand-carved eternal resting box.
I thought it only right that I pay my respects, Grandma said. Loretta was in my seniors group.
Steva had himself wedged between Grandma and Loretta.
Of course, he said. Very kind of you.
I see it's another one of them closed coffin things, Grandma said.
The family's preference, Steva said, his voice as smooth as custard, his expression benign.
I guess it's best, being that she was shot and then all carved up in the autopsy.
Steva showed a flicker of nervousness.
Shame they had to do the autopsy, Grandma said. Loretta was shot in the chest, and she could have had an open casket, except I guess when they do the autopsy, they take your brain out, and I suppose that makes it hard to get a good hairdo.
Three people who had been standing nearby sucked in air and speedwalked to the door.
So, what did she look like? Grandma asked Steva. Would you have been able to do anything with her if it wasn't for the brain thing?
Steva had Grandma by the elbow.
Why don't we go into the lobby where it's not so crowded, and we can have some cookies?
That's a good idea, Grandma said. I could use a cookie. Nothing interesting to see here, anyway.
I followed them out, and on the way stopped to talk to Ziggy and Benny. He's not going to show up here, I said. He's not that crazy. Ziggy and Benny shrugged in unison.
Just in case, Ziggy said.
What was the deal with the Mooner yesterday?
He wanted to see the club, Ziggy said. He came out of your apartment building to get some air, and we got to talking, and one thing led to another.
Yeah, we didn't mean to kidnap the little guy, Benny said. And we don't want old Lady Morelli putting the eye on us. We don't believe in any of that old world stuff, but why take a chance?
We heard she put the eye on Carmine Scolari, and he couldn't, perform after that, Ziggy said.
The story goes he even tried that new medicine, but nothing helped, Benny said.
Benny and Ziggy both gave an involuntary shiver. They didn't want to be in the same predicament as Carmine Scolari. I looked past Benny and Ziggy into the lobby and spotted Morelli. He was standing to one side against the wall, surveying the crowd. He was wearing jeans and black cross trainers and a black T-shirt under a tweed sport coat. He looked lean and predatory. Men approached him to talk sports and then move on. Women watched from a distance, wondering if Morelli was as dangerous as he looked, if he was as bad as his reputation. He caught my eye from across the room and crooked his finger at me, doing the universal "come here" gesture. He draped a proprietary arm around me when I reached him and kissed me on my neck, just below my ear.
Where's Mooner?
Watching television with Valerie's kids. Are you here because you're hoping to catch Eddie?
No, I'm here hoping to catch you. I think you should let Mooner overnight with your parents, and you should come home with me.
Tempting, but I'm with Grandma and Valerie.
I just got here, Morelli said. Did Grandma manage to get the lid up?
Steva intercepted her. Morelli ran his finger along the lace edging on the shirt.
I like the lace.
What about the skirt?
The skirt looks like a shower curtain. Sort of erotic. Makes me wonder if you're wearing underwear. Oh, my God.
That's the same thing Ronald DeChooch said to me.
Morelli looked around.
I didn't see him when I came in. I didn't know Ronald and Loretta Ricci moved in the same circles.
Maybe Ronald is here for the same reason Ziggy and Benny and Tom Bell are here. Mrs. Dugan came over to us, all smiles.
Congratulations, she said. I heard about the wedding. I'm so thrilled for you, and you are so lucky to have gotten the P&A Hall for your reception. Your grandmother must have pulled some strings on that one.
P&A Hall? I looked up at Morelli and rolled my eyes, and Morelli gave me the silent head shake.
Excuse me, I said to Mrs. Dugan. I have to find Grandma Mazur.
I put my head down and plowed through the crowd to Grandma.
Mrs. Dugan just told me we have the P&A hall rented for my reception, I stage whispered to her.
Is that true?
Lucille Stiller had it reserved for her parents' 50th wedding anniversary, and her mother died just last night. As soon as we heard, we snapped the hall right up. Things like this don't happen every day.
I don't want a reception in the P&A hall.
Everyone wants a reception in the P&A, Grandma said. It's the best place in the burg.
I don't want a big reception. I want to have the reception in the backyard.
Or not at all. I'm not even sure if I'm having a wedding.
What if it rains? Where will we put all the people?
I don't want a lot of people.
There's got to be 100 people in Joe's family alone, Grandma said.
Joe was standing behind me.
I'm having a panic attack, I said to him. I can't breathe. My tongue is swelling. I'm going to choke.
Choking might be the best thing, Joe said.
I looked at my watch. The viewing wasn't over for an hour and a half. My luck, I'd leave and Eddie would waltz in. I need some air, I said. I'm going outside for a couple minutes.
There's people I haven't talked to yet, Grandma said. I'll meet up with you later.
Joe followed me out, and we stood on the porch, breathing in street air, happy to get away from the carnations, enjoying the car fumes. Lights were on, and there was a steady stream of traffic on the street. The funeral home sounded festive behind us. No rock music, but plenty of talking and laughing. We sat on a step and watched the traffic in companionable silence. We were sitting there relaxing when the white Cadillac rolled by. Was that Eddie DeChooch? I asked Joe.
Look like him to me, Joe said.
Neither of us moved. Not much we could do about DeChooch driving by. Our cars were parked two blocks away. We should do something to apprehend him, I said to Joe.
What do you have in mind?
Well, it's too late now, but you should have shot out a tire.
I'll have to remember that for next time.
5 minutes later, we were still sitting there, and DeChooch rolled by again.
Jesus, Joe said, what's with this guy?
Maybe he's looking for a parking place. Morelli was on his feet.
I'm getting my truck. You go inside and tell Tom Bell.
Morelli took off, and I went to get Bell. I passed Myron Birnbaum on the stairs. Hold on. Myron Birnbaum was leaving. He was giving up his parking place, and DeChooch was looking for a parking place. And knowing Myron Birnbaum, I was betting he'd parked close by. All I had to do was keep Birnbaum's space open until DeChooch came along. DeChooch would park, and I'd have him trapped. God damn, I was so clever. I followed Birnbaum, and just as I'd expected, he was parked at the corner, three cars down from Steva's, nicely sandwiched between a Toyota and a Ford SUV. I waited for him to pull out, and then I jumped into the empty space and started waving people away. Eddie DeChooch could barely see past the front bumper of his car, so I didn't have to worry about him spotting me from a distance. My plan was to save the space for him and then hide behind the SUV when the Cadillac came into view. I heard heels clacking on the sidewalk and turned to see Valerie clippity-clopping over to me.
"What's going on?" Valerie said. "Are you holding a parking place for someone? Do you want me to help?"
An old lady in a 10-year-old Oldsmobile stopped short of the parking space and put her right turn signal on.
Sorry, I said, motioning for her to move on. This spot is taken.
The old lady responded by gesturing for me to get out of the way. I shook my head, no.
Try the parking lot.
Valerie was standing to my side, waving her arms, pointing to the lot, looking like one of those guys who direct planes onto the runway. She was dressed almost exactly like me, with the exception of a slightly different color scheme. Valerie's shoes were lavender. The old lady beeped her horn at me and started creeping forward into the space. Valerie jumped back, but I put my hands on my hips and glared at the woman and refused to budge. There was another old lady in the passenger seat. She rolled her window down and stuck her head out.
This is our parking place.
This is a police operation, I said. You're going to have to park someplace else.
Are you a police officer?
I'm bail enforcement.
That's right, Valerie said. This is my sister, and she's a bail bonds enforcement person.
Bail bonds is different from police, the woman said.
The police are on their way, I told her.
I think you're a big fibber. I think you're saving the spot for your boyfriend. Nobody in police work would dress like you.
The Oldsmobile was about a third into the parking space, with the rear of the car blocking off half of Hamilton. From the corner of my eye, I caught a flash of white, and before I had a chance to react, DeChooch smashed into the Oldsmobile. The Oldsmobile bounced forward and smashed into the back of the SUV, missing me by half an inch. The Cadillac careened off the left rear quarter panel of the Oldsmobile, and I could see DeChooch struggling to get control. He turned and looked directly at me. For a moment, we all seemed suspended in time, and then he took off.
Damn!
The two old ladies wrenched the doors to the Oldsmobile open and struggled out.
Look at my car, the driver said. It's a wreck.
She whirled around at me.
It's all your fault. You did this. I hate you.
And she hit me in the shoulder with her purse.
Yow, I said. That hurts.
She was a couple inches shorter than me, but had me by a few pounds. Her hair was cut short and was newly permed. She looked to be in her 60s. She was wearing bright red lipstick, had crayon dark brown eyebrows onto herself, and her cheeks were decorated with spots of rose-toned rouge, definitely not from the Berg, probably Hamilton Township.
I should have run you over when I had the chance, she said.
She hit me with the purse again, and this time I grabbed it by the strap and yanked it out of her hand. Behind me, I could hear Valerie give a little yelp of surprise.
My purse! The woman shrieked.
Thief! Help! She took my purse!
A crowd had started to form around us, motorists and mourners. The old lady grabbed one of the men on the fringe.
She's stealing my purse. She caused the accident, and now she's stealing my purse. Get the police!
Grandma jumped out of the crowd.
What's going on? I just got here. What's the ruckus about?
She stole my purse, the woman said.
Did not, I said back.
Did so?
Did not?
Yes, you did,
the woman said, and she shoved me back with a hand to my shoulder.
Keep your hands off my granddaughter, Grandma said.
Yes, and she's my sister,
Valerie chimed in.
Mind your own business,
the woman yelled at Grandma and Valerie. The woman shoved Grandma, and Grandma shoved back, and next thing they were slapping at each other, and Valerie was standing to the side, shrieking. I stepped forward to stop them, and in the confusion of flailing arms and shrill threats, someone smacked me in the nose. Little twinkle lights spread across my field of vision, and I went down to one knee. Grandma and the old lady stopped slapping at each other and offered me tissues and advice on how to stop the blood that was dripping from my nose.
Someone get a paramedic,
Valerie shouted.
Call 911, get a doctor, get the undertaker.
Morelli arrived and hauled me to my feet.
I think we can cross boxing off the list of possible alternative professions.
The old lady started it.
From the way your nose looks, I'd say she also finished it.
Lucky punch.
DeChooch passed me going about 70 in the opposite direction,
Morelli said.
I couldn't turn in time to go after him.
That is the story of my life.
When my nose stopped bleeding, Morelli loaded Grandma and Valerie and me into my CRV and followed us to my parents' house. He waved goodbye at that point, not wanting to be around when my mother saw us. I had bloodstains on Valerie's skirt and knit shirt. The skirt had a small tear in it. My knee was skinned and bleeding, and I had the beginning of a black eye. Grandma was in about the same condition, but without the black eye and torn skirt. And something had happened to Grandma's hair, so that it was standing straight up, making her look like Don King. Because news travels at the speed of light in the Berg, by the time we got home, my mother had already taken 6 phone calls on the subject and knew every detail of our brawl. She clamped her mouth shut tight when we walked in and ran to get ice for my eye.
It wasn't so bad,
Valerie said to my mother.
The police got it all straightened out.
and the EMT people said they didn't think Stephanie's nose was broken. And they don't do much for a broken nose anyway, do they, Stephanie? Maybe put a Band-Aid on it.
She took the ice pack from my mother and put it on her own head.
Do we have any liquor in the house?
Mooner ambled over from the television.
Dude, he said, what's up?
Had a little dispute over a parking place. He nodded his head.
It's all about standing in line, isn't it?
And he went back to the television.
You're not leaving him here, are you?
My mother asked.
He's not living with me too, is he?
Do you think that would work? I asked hopefully.
No!
Then I guess I'm not leaving him. Angie looked around from the television.
Is it true you got hit by an old lady?
It was an accident, I told her.
When a person gets hit in the head, the blow makes their brain swell. It kills brain cells and they don't regenerate.
Isn't it late for you to be watching television?
I don't have to go to bed because I don't have to go to school tomorrow,
Angie said.
We haven't registered in this new school system. And besides, we're used to staying up late. My father frequently had business dinners, and we were allowed to stay up until he got home.
Only now he's gone,
Mary Alice said.
He left us so he could sleep with the babysitter. I saw them kissing once, and Daddy had a fork in his